Just before beginning, I'd just like to thank Father Anaya for all that he does here at Mount St. Michael's and at St. Mary's Parish in Tacoma, and just a great friend and a wonderful priest. So. A devout servant of Mary will never perish. Today I would like to speak to you about the spiritual life, the spiritual combat. No, that's Father Dominic's talk. So not everybody can do that, so when you get a chance, it's kind of fun to do it. So that's okay. No, but seriously, in January, like Bishop Hieronymus mentioned, the priests were he was discussing different topics, and I wanted something to be inspiring. There's so much negativity in the world today, so we need something to pull us up. And it happened providentially. The assistant principal in our school, St. Joseph's in Wayne, Michigan, Paula Storm, asked if I could teach a class on military history, and I've never done that. So she gave me two books, and there wasn't a lot in there. So I did my own research, and it ended up actually writing another one. So it wasn't really planned, but God did have a plan with it, because it is a very, I was extremely inspired, and I'll share these stories with you. So for all of you, you're not going to get tested on the names, the dates, any of the things like that. High school students understand the lessons that are to be learned, but don't get lost in the details, because there'll be a lot. Also, talk about divine providence. One of the students, Luke Bakel, helped with the PowerPoint, but he's a eighth grader, and you know his PowerPoint skills, he's just kind of learning it. So Anne-Marie Netzel helped with this tremendously, and she's going to run it. So thanks, Anne-Marie, for assisting. Consider the birds of the air. Jesus, at the Sermon on the Mount, spoke some of the most inspiring words that have ever been heard. And St. Louis de Montfort said, "What God wants of you is that you should live each day as it comes, like a bird in the trees, without worrying about tomorrow. Be at peace. And trust in divine providence and the Blessed Virgin, and do not seek anything but to please God and to love him." God cares for each of us personally, and no matter how great the difficulty, how violent the temptation, how difficult the situation and hopeless it may appear, God will see us through. God cares. A few days ago, as we were with our church, I was going into church and I smelled gas, and I thought, now this talk could have begun with a bang, but I'm glad it didn't. So I blew out all the candles, looked throughout the church and the social hall, and some cleaning person left one of the knobs on the gas stove on low. And we have a pilot light for the water heater in the social hall, so the whole place could have. So we were very fortunate. God looked after us. I wouldn't be here today, but it's only a few days ago. But what happened, Frank's Furniture in Wayne, I wasn't as fortunate, it was about a mile away. There was a, someone smelled gas there, and they sent an inspector. He couldn't find anything. And so two employees came in, turned the light switch on. They ignited the gas, and the whole place blew it and killed two people instantly. There was an SUV that was lifted 50 feet and blew all the windows off the building across the street. So we keep them in your prayers. The words divine providence are very interesting. Divine, God is omnipotent, and he is there to assist us. And providence comes from two Latin words, pro, which is for or on behalf of, and videre, which means to see. So God's looking after us. He's got our back. He's going to take care of us. And it's really important, if God's with us, who can be against us? St. Thomas Aquinas wrote that God in his providence orders all things, even the slightest, through his eternal forethought of his wisdom. And all things that act do so as instruments moved by him. History furnishes us many examples, and that's what we'll try to explain to you. But it's important for people not to get lax. If things are too easy, that's what happens. St. Francis Xavier said that God allows temptations, trials, difficulties, so that we can turn wholeheartedly to him. As we journey together through history, be inspired. Now, we're not going to cover history in the normal way, ancient time to modern times, because none of you have been back in those ancient times. You're more familiar with contemporary and going back. So we'll start with some American history, and then after that, going back closer to our lifetimes. There's a lot of different facts, but everything will be helpful. What's amazing with Almighty God, he can use anything. He uses battles, he uses hurricanes, tornadoes, alpine winds, rain, and then he always inspires people to do the right thing at the right time, the leaders. He pulls out leaders all over the world at different critical junctures of history that actually have changed the course of history. God's protected the church against modernists, Freemasons, communists, against the Protestant Reformation, and against, you know, the Vandals, the forces of Islam, the Huns, the Arians, and the Roman persecution. So he'll continue to watch over us. God loves the country very dearly, the United States of America. He knew that America would have a special plan in these latter times, and it does. That there are more Trident Latin masses here, more churches, there's more Catholic schools, the religious, laity, priest, very dedicated. Father Mateo said of all the Catholics in the world, the Americans were the most dedicated and the most inspiring, and that says a lot. He was all over the world. Now I'd like to talk to you about some of our early missionaries, that they did so much to help. St. Isaac Jogues was the first white man to actually step foot in Michigan. He was at Sault Ste. Marie. And then we think of Father Sarah, Father DeSmet, Father Marquette, and Father Kino. These missionaries went through the whole country and helped the Native Americans. They gave them the faith, taught them to raise animals and crops and to be nice to their neighbors. And whole tribes actually converted. We're familiar with a lot of the Flatheads, the Nez Perce in this area, the Hurons, the Algonquins, and there's so many other different tribes. So they were very successful. During that time from 1542 to 1812, 120 priests died in the United States and the colonies, whatever what was at that time, in 18 different states. So the blood of the martyrs sprouted the faith, and it grew like no place else in the world. What's pretty amazing, at the time of the Revolutionary War, there were only 25,000 Americans. By 1920, there were 20 million, 1940, 40 million, 1960, 60 million. Now, with the missionaries, this is quite interesting. All the different religious orders and congregations, there were Benedictines, Carmelites, Dominicans, Franciscans, Jesuits, Oblates, and Vincentians. And so what's amazing, in 1634, 30,000 natives converted in Florida and Georgia just in that time. So it's pretty incredible. And then we have all these Catholic names, Santa Fe, Sacramento, Los Angeles, San Antonio, St. Louis, St. Paul, Sault Ste. Marie. You know, there's a St. Charles, Illinois, St. Michael, Minnesota, and even a St. Anthony, Idaho. God destined America for great things. It was discovered around the time of the Reformation, but became a haven for Catholics. And we're one of the most Catholic countries in the world, literally. If you look around you, all of the different cultures that we have here, there's no place in the world that has that same group like that. And so to be universal, America is, and we have all these wonderful Catholic heritage from all these different nations. Even though Brendan and St. Leif Erikson came to our shores earlier, that thousands of Catholics found a refuge here. And they found independence that they could actually live their faith. In England, there were persecutions. Many of the other countries in Europe, it was hard. Wherever what the ruler had, that's what the people were supposed to follow, that religion. So our Constitution, God actually used Freemasons to help us have freedom of religion, which is extremely important. The church grew here because of that, and they ended the persecutions. What's amazing is Benjamin Franklin in 1784, he petitioned Pope Pius VI that America have its own bishops. He actually went with Father Carroll up to Canada during Revolutionary War, told the Canadian Catholics, don't fight with the British against the Americans. You know, just let us have our own country. And so it's pretty amazing how that worked. Also, it's believed George Washington became Catholic before he died, and the church really grew tremendously. George Washington is considered the father of our country, and he was really a humble man, and he prayed, and he asked God's assistance, and God heard our prayers. At the Battle of Trenton, we see, actually before that, I'm sorry, there were the courage of Americans at Lexington and Concord, their tenacity at Bunker Hill, and their perseverance against all odds. Americans fought the greatest army and navy in the world at the time. And the British, they actually, you know, like invaded. You know, they were all over the 13 colonies, but still God found a way for us to become independent. Washington crossing the Delaware on Christmas evening, he had 2,400 troops, 18 cannons, and most people thought it was not going to work. But what's interesting, Colonel Rahl, who was head of the Hessians, the German mercenaries in Trenton, he was actually forewarned. And it was interesting because there were some spies and some deserters said, yeah, the Americans are coming. He said, yeah, sure they're coming. Look, it's Christmas, you know, they're going to come. Look at the weather outside. So they marched 10 miles through the snow and ice, and they surprise attacked the Hessians. Within moments, 40 of the Hessians were killed, and 918 captured. And the Americans, we lost 4 people were killed and 8 were wounded. One of them was President Monroe. So God was surely with us. Now just imagine the Christmas, day after Christmas dinner, those Minutemen had, and all the leftovers, and sure they had German beer too. And kegs, and I think all the ammunition supplies were all stocked. And there's going to be another thing the day after Christmas. It's going to come shortly after. Now, war is a horrible thing. It's a punishment for sin, and it does horrible things to the world. You think all the families that are destroyed, all the violent deaths, human misery, mass destruction, but sometimes it's unavoidable. So people have to do their duty. And a lot of people during World War II, you hear a lot about the recycling efforts and the Liberty Bonds, but no, you don't hear a lot about the prayer drive. That was one of the greatest, and that's why we were victorious in World War II. My mother told me that she and her mother used to walk about a mile or more to make holy hours, and they had public rosaries, they had benediction. There were a lot of different things that the churches would offer, sorrowful mother novenas. And I really believe her prayers helped my dad's unit, because we'll talk about that in a little bit. But it is really important, that prayer, and that's the rosary, you think of the power of that and how it gave Americans courage when they needed it and protected. All her brothers came back unharmed, and so did my dad. And so she married him after he returned. Now, the troops on the battlefield, they prayed the rosary too. You know, a lot of times you see pictures that some movies even show that. The rosary was very important to them. And so it gave them courage. And there were a number of chaplains. I don't know if any of you were, when I was in the seminary here, there was a priest, Father Falk, who was a Navy chaplain. I took care of him in the infirmary. So did some, maybe some of the other brothers and maybe priests, but he was really dedicated. And with these, you think of the courage of these chaplains, you know, going on the battlefield, their only weapon is the rosary, but, you know, that Pope Pius XII called it like the sling of David, and many of them came back unharmed. St. Teresa of Avila said, let nothing trouble you, nothing frighten you, all is quickly passing, God alone changes not. One of the most important battles of World War II is probably one you never heard of, I never did, the Battle of Mortain. This took place, if you think, right after the Normandy invasion in 1944. So American forces were coming on that Normandy shore, and they were coming on the Brittany shore. Patton was bringing his armored columns and trying to make the American forces united, and Hitler wanted to stop that. So he sent 12,000 Germans to take a hill, one hill. There were 450 Americans on that hill, and it's the 30th Infantry Division, and most of them were former National Guardsmen, so they weren't even regular soldiers. 277 of them were injured or killed. Eventually, 12,000 Americans joined and assisted with aerial attacks, artillery, and to hold that hill because it was a key point that all the forces, once that hill was, those roads were clear, that they could go into Germany. And the Germans sent 80,000 troops. We had 12,000, and the Germans were defeated and they retreated. That was Hill 314. Now, the Battle of the Bulge is the largest land battle in the European theater. It took place in December 1944 to 1945, and there's a picture of some tanks. You can see how big the German one is, how small the American one is. But there was quite a huge battle. And what occurred was, there was a Colonel Piper who was in charge of the Black SS, and he was bringing their column through with tanks and infantry. They killed, with the time that he was there, 450 American prisoners of war and also Belgian civilians. And a day or so before he ran into my dad's unit, that they'd killed about 85 people in Malmondy, Belgium. They were all machine gunned. And so my dad was on a hillside and with anti-aircraft guns, and the major in charge said, Germans are coming, everybody run. My dad said, nobody's going anywhere. And so they had to change the machine gun barrels every 3 minutes, and they stopped the German drive in that area, and they surrendered, and it was good because I wouldn't be here today with Father Dominic. So, God looked after that. General George Patton, here's the day after Christmas. He helped Bastogne. 18,000 defenders. They were outnumbered 5-1 by the Germans. The 101st Airborne was there. And day after Christmas, you know, and they were praying for weather. They needed good weather so that the fighter bombers could take out the tanks, and they did. And so they were able to drop in supplies, and God protected them. What's really incredible, the movie Patton talks about that Patton and his Third Army moved farther and faster and engaged more units, divisions, in less time than any other unit in the United States. And that's pretty amazing. So we owe a lot to General Patton. St. Augustine said, God cares for each of us as if he alone existed, and for all of us as if we were but one. Now, the Battle of Vienna is pretty incredible. Vienna is the gateway to Europe, and so the Muslims really wanted it. So they brought 200,000 troops. They brought their own, and they got all the allies in their area. And the mighty Muslim Ottoman army, on the way there, they attacked a town called Perchtoldorf. And the people surrendered, and they said, okay, we'll let you surrender, and then they slaughtered them. So there are only 20,000 defenders of Vienna. They had twice as many cannons, but the Muslim miners went under their walls and they placed explosive there. And just the day before the final battle, they defused, the defenders defused 10 explosive devices that would have destroyed the walls, and the battle would have been already taken care of. But God had other plans, so did Pope Innocent the 11th. What occurred was he developed something called the Catholic Alliance, and he helped fund it. So you got Catholics from Bavaria, Poland, Portugal, Saxony, Spain, and Venice. And he told them to come together. We got to save Vienna. And the Vienna was so bad, the leader there, he'd fled already. So he wasn't even staying with his people. So there's the king, Juan III Sobieski. He brought 50,000 infantry, 30,000 cavalry, brought them across the Danube River on pontoons. Muslims never thought that he could do that, but he thought ahead. And what's pretty incredible, he already beat the Muslim leader, Kara Mustafa Pasha. So he knew his tactics. So as the walls of Vienna are here, the Muslim camp's here, just happens to be a hill on the other side. And so that's where he parked his cannons. He brought them up. They couldn't even believe they could bring cannons up there, but he found a way. And this would be September 11th and 12th. And it was pretty amazing how things worked out. This would be in 1683. Now, there's a man named, he turned to Our Lady of Częstochowa because she protected Poland, and she's going to have to protect Austria. So Our Lady, her strength is immeasurable, and so she is there to assist us. Now, there's a very important person. His name is Jerzy Kuski. And what happens, most of you never heard of him, but you're going to like him afterwards. He's going to be very important in your life that went for his contribution. What happened, he was a member of Polish infantry. He's from Ukraine, but he spent time in Istanbul, and he was a traitor, also T-R-A-D-E-R. He ends up becoming a spy, but he's a good spy. So he ended up having Turkish attire, and he knew Turkish songs. He could speak eight languages. So he mingled into their camp, just whistling or singing along, learned all their plans, and they told Charles V, Duke of Lorraine, what was going on. And then he went back to Vienna and said, hey, Sobieski's on his way. So quite an interesting man. But there's another detail we'll talk about after the battle, that where he becomes really famous. It was quite amazing how things worked. So the Polish army, Sobieski had a real special strategy. So he had the cannons up on top, the artillery. He had the infantry pin the Muslim infantry against the walls of Vienna. And then he brought these people that scare the heck out of anybody, hussars. They're soldiers that have, look at those wings on the back, all those feathers and stuff. Can you imagine 18,000 of these guys coming at you on a full gallop? It's the biggest cavalry charge in history. I mean, the ground was shaking. These people didn't know what to do. They just ran. They had 15-foot spears. They're coming right at you, and they were shoulder to shoulder, 30,000, 18,000 of these. And so the Muslim army just disbanded. And Pope Innocent XI instituted the Feast of the Holy Name of Mary. And it was a 15-hour battle, but it changed the course of history. Islam was not able to invade Europe again. And by August 1717, the Ottomans relinquished their control of Hungary. So after the battle, our famous friend Jerzy Kuczynski, he was given several hundred bags of these dark-colored beans. And when he went to Istanbul, he knew how to roast coffee, so he started the first coffee shop. He's the first person to mix cream and sugar with coffee. So Austria has a statue to him, but they don't have one to Sobieski, so figure. St. Francis of Assisi said, when you are in danger and pain or in doubt, invoke Mary, think of Mary. May she be ever on your lips and in your heart. St. Francis de Sales said that God tests his most beloved servants that they may prove their fidelity to him and that they may accomplish great works. For God, under whose guidance we have embarked, will always be attentive to provide us with whatever is necessary. When all shall fail, then God will take care of us. Now, in the 16th century is the Battle of Lepanto, and it's really important to know a little bit of the prehistory of this, and the battle that I'll cover after it took place 6 years before, and these were really quite dramatic. So the Ottoman Turks controlled the Mediterranean Sea, and they wanted to take Cyprus. They killed 100,000 civilians and soldiers and tortured many of them and then sold a lot of them into slavery. So they were going to just continue from there. And what's amazing in Cyprus, there is a captain, Marco Antonio Bragadino. He had only 8,000 troops. He held on against 100,000 Muslim troops, Ottoman Turks, and 1,500 cannons for a year. When he was down to like 2,000 men, and most of those were wounded or sick, they were out of supplies, he was given an honorable surrender by Lala Mustafa Pasha. He said that you can go ahead out of the camp and you can go back to your countries and we'll just pretend like nothing happened. Well, he lied. He pulled out a knife, cut off his ear, Bragadino's ear. Then he told the soldiers, cut out his nose, off his nose and his other ear too. Then they tortured him for about 2 weeks and they eventually skinned him alive, and then they used it like a windsock, you know, on their ships. And so something this Lala Mustafa Pasha wasn't aware of at the Battle of Lepanto, his brothers are running the biggest ships in the battle, the Galicises, who have cannons on the side. And you can imagine how they really, how they came to fore later. Pope St. Pius V, as Innocent XI did, organized these countries. We had to do something. So he started the Holy League of Christian Powers in March 1571, placing the campaign under the protection of Our Lady. And Don Juan of Austria was led the campaign. He was only 25 years old, and the countries that were in this areas that were in this league was Venice, the Papal States, Naples, Genoa, Spain, and Malta. So they had 212 ships, about 20,000 men. They had to fight 280 ships and 35,000. And then the Muslims were in their winter port in southern Greece. So there was going to be a big battle. Now just imagine running, controlling these ships that when most of them are done by oars, powered by oars. So can you imagine, hey, let's take a left turn, you know, I mean, how you do that, you know, they put up flags, like, what is that flag, you know, I mean, they didn't have radio contact, didn't have anything, but what's really amazing, the Muslims were going to come out of the port, and the Christian flotilla blocked it, and the Muslim fleet was in a three-mile crescent, the Christian fleet was in the form of a cross. It's really pretty amazing. On the Don Juan ship was a banner of Christ crucified and also Our Lady of Guadalupe that was touched to the tilma, was given by the bishop in Mexico. So quite interesting how this all came together. So Bragadino's brothers took their revenge. They took out a third of the Muslim fleet in minutes in the front part of that campaign. Don Juan went into Eli Pasta's ship that had those heads of all the generals that were killed in Cyprus, and this two-hour battle, Ali Pasha was killed, and then they pulled the Satana behind the rail. And the Muslim fleet was annihilated. As a result of this, 15,000 Christian galley slaves were freed, and an invasion by Islam was stopped. What's pretty incredible is the Holy League lost 7,000 soldiers and 20 ships, but look at the statistics on the other side. They lost 25,000 Turks, and 80 ships were sunk, 130 captured, and all the ones that went to Istanbul, probably half of those sunk on the way there. So that ended that. Pope Pius XI wrote about the rosary. A countless legion of most saintly men of every age and of every condition have not only held Our Lady's Rosary most dear and have most piously recited it, but have used it at all times as a most powerful weapon to overcome the devil, preserve the purity of their lives, to acquire virtue more zealously. Now, if you look at your watch, if you have a calendar, it's 10/7/21. Well, this battle took place 450 years ago to the day. Sister Lucia said, "There's no problem, I tell you, no matter how difficult it is, that we cannot resolve by the prayer of the Holy Rosary. It will console our Lord." Now, the Battle of Malta, like I said, took place just 6 years earlier. It was 40,000 Ottoman Turks against 6,000 Knights Hospitallers in Malta. And they held out for about 4 or 5 months. They took Fort Elmo, but at Fort St. Michael, they were not able to conquer that. It was one of the largest cannon battles in history. And at the end of the campaign, it was kind of amazing because you think that the defenders would stay behind their walls, but instead they rushed out of their camp, out of their fort, into the Ottoman camp and were very successful. Ottoman Turks lost 20,000, the Knights Hospitallers 3,000. St. Ambrose taught that when we find ourselves in some grave danger, we must not lose courage, but firmly trust in God. For where there's a danger, greatest danger, there's also the greatest help from Him who wants to be our help in times of peace and in times of tribulation. Now, the Council of Trent is one of the greatest things that have really occurred in history, too, because it stopped the Reformation in Italy. We ended up with the Tridentine Latin Mass, a codified Mass throughout the world. We ended up with the Catechism of the Council of Trent, the Roman Ritual. Seminaries were established and organized. And there was so much that occurred. So that was one of an important part of history. 15th century was the Battle of Orléans. Things look really bad during the Hundred Years' War from 1337 to 1453. England controlled a great part of France, and it looked like France was just going to be an English colony. But God brought Joan of Arc to assist. And so she ferried 5,000 troops to Orléans, and on the way there, they took some of these British forts, and they did the same tactic. Instead of staying in the fort, they went out the fort and conquered the British. And on her pennant were the names of Jesus and Mary. She died in 1431, declared innocent in a trial in 1456, and canonized 1920. What's really amazing, in 1458, the British were driven out of the Pale of Calais just a half a century before the Reformation. So God saw the future. Now, the Battle of Moray is pretty amazing. It has to do with the Rosary also. St. Dominic was at this time, and this would have been September 12, 1213. And it was Simon de Montfort who only had 1,500 troops against 44,000. Now, can you imagine that? Okay? And can you imagine, yeah, we're going to fight for God. You see all these people. It's like, okay. they had a lot of faith. What's incredible is the Albigensians were like the Manichaean heretics. They hated the church. They considered suicide an act of virtue. Immorality was like a virtue. It was just anarchy all over Europe, at least that area, near Toulouse, where Albi is. So the people were praying the rosary, St. Dominic asked. And so Simon de Montfort, he ended up hitting the center line, and they killed King Peter of Aragon II. And then all the Albigensians just ran. And within a few years, that was the end of the Albigensians. The Battle of Lage Navage to Tolosa, something you probably never heard of. I wasn't real familiar with that. But in 1147, the Almohad Caliphate controlled a great part of the Iberian Peninsula, Portugal, and Spain. And so what happened on June 21st, 1212, a local shepherd guided 50,000 Christian troops in this path that they didn't know about, And they were got behind the enemy lines. And the outcome was pretty incredible. It was King Alfonso VIII, King Sancho VII of Navarre. They attacked the Caliph Muhammad al-Nazir, and the Muslims had 100,000 casualties, the Christians 2,000. Now, the Battle of Lisbon, talk about things working out. Divine Providence found a way to free Portugal of Muslim domination. It was by a storm. Actually, there were 13,000 crusaders on the way to the Holy Land, and a storm brought them into the city of Porto. They had to get on land because the storm was so bad. And then King Henrique of Portugal said, hey, can you help us? We got some Muslims here that, you know, Pope was talking about having these people leave. And so this took place on October 25th. They landed in June, October 25th, 1147. The Muslim army surrendered and marched out the gates. So Portugal became free. Now, Attila the Hun scared the heck out of everyone. I remember when Father and I were in high school, they had a picture of these people with spears with heads on them, and like, whoa. So he was considered ruthless, and actually quite, he changed history. But what happened in 451, St. Genevieve told the people of Paris to pray, and Attila the Hun left. Now, I think of the odds of that happening. You know, I mean, Paris. And then a year later, Pope St. Leo I met him at the gates of Rome and told him to turn around, and he did. And his general said, are you crazy? We came all this way to Rome. We want to sack Rome. And so what occurred was, yeah, you didn't see what I saw. He said, what did you see? Well, I saw St. Peter and Paul, and St. Peter had his sword out, and he had it right above my head, you know. Attila died the following year, and that ended the threat. Now, the Battle of Frigidus is something you never heard of, and I didn't either, but it's amazing. This is in Slovenia. Now, in 392, there's the Emperor Valentinian III was killed, and a guy named Eugenius usurped the throne in the Western Empire. Now, in the East is Emperor Theodosius the Great. So there's two emperors, but this is really interesting. The Eastern Emperor was Catholic, this one was a pagan. He was restoring paganism again. So what occurred, Eugenius brought his armies to Slovenia, and Theodosius brought his, and this was good, you know, when the Goths were running away from the Huns, they wanted to take over Roman land, and Theodosius said, look, yeah, you can do it, because it's better you got you people being on our side than us fighting you. So the Goths ended up being on Theodosius' side. Now, what's really incredible, they had a battle the first day. Alaric was leading the Goths. Nothing really happened. Next day, or actually that night, several thousand circled around and got at the back of the Catholics' camp. And the Theodosius was praying, and so were his troops. And these people said, you know, Eugenius isn't paying us enough. You know, can we fight for you? And they said, sure, yeah. So they ended up fighting for them. Now, this is where the battle is incredible. The next day, the battle began, but the wind changed direction. In Slovenia, they have these alpine winds that can get up to 120 miles an hour. Well, these were only 60 miles an hour or so. Maybe I wasn't there, so I don't know. But they were a lot. But here's what happened. As Eugenius' archers shot their arrows, the wind changed direction, and so the arrows turned around and killed all the archers. And then sand blew into their face, and they couldn't see, and so they were routed. So Eugenius' army was routed. Theodosius went to Rome, said, hey, the Catholic faith is back. You know, we end paganism. And that's how that ended. Pretty amazing. And this is actually historically, you know, true. So the Thundering Legion, this is something you might not have heard of either. In 170 AD, this is under Marcus Aurelius. One of his legions was going through Moravia, and they were in mountain passes, and they couldn't find water. These people are dying of thirst. It's hot, and they're fighting someone at the same time. So God found a way to take care of their thirst and rout their enemies. He just had this huge storm. So everything got dark, And then so the Romans just, they knelt down and they prayed to God, and all of a sudden they put their shields and their helmets out collecting water. Everybody had a nice drink. And then their enemy was routed. All this lightning and thunder, wind chased them all out of the situation, and they were called the Thundering Legion. So pretty interesting. I'm sorry, I missed one picture about the burning of Washington, D.C. This is kind of interesting. It has to do with wind and rain. I think it's around the same topic. What occurred in 1814, it was in August, I think 12th, that the British burned Washington, D.C., the White House and everything else, and it looked, you know, pretty hopeless. So what do we do? How do you put out fires in a huge area? You know, those from California, any ideas? You know, one way, God found a way. He had a hurricane come, so it took out everything. But then a tornado came, too, and it chased the British out. So it did two things at once. Just in closing, I'd like to just bring a couple of things. I want you all to think in your lives about something that's providential, just something that how God watched over you. And so if you can think of something that how he looked after you. Just a real quick couple stories is Bishop Avronis and Father Casimir were in a van during a summer trip. This is a number of years ago when they were seminarians. And then they saw headlights coming right at them. And everybody in the van was singing something just to stay awake, I think. And so the driver stopped the vehicle. It was the ocean on one side or a mountain on the other, no place to go. So he stopped so it wouldn't be a head-on collision. He turned to the side. Nobody was seriously injured. I was in the back seat. Father Dominic, when he was about 8, our mother picked us up from school and some other kids, and we got sides broadsided, and the car spun around twice and hit a tree. And he was thrown out, ended up by a rose bush. My sister had a head concussion. We had about 5 other kids in the car. Somebody was holding a statue of Our Lady, and everything, nobody got hurt seriously. Everybody got out of the hospital. So God is looking after us. And just for myself, just in closing, that I ended up with food poisoning on 3 different times. When we were 21, Father Dominic and I had a pancreas problem. They gave us 6 months to live, and we're still here today. And God's looking after us. So with St. Joseph's Media, we're able to help people in 99 countries right now. We still got 100 to go, so at least we're on our way. But thank you for your prayers, and a devout servant of Mary will never perish. Let's